Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Trail Culture. I'm your host, Em Robertson, and I'm so stoked that you're tuning in. As usual, Trail Culture wouldn't be happening without the help and continued support of Carbon Endurance, a product distribution house that has all your training and racing needs covered. For those who are taking on big training blocks in this heat, Carbon Endurance offers guidance on heat training and has amazing options for recovery in their Pillar Performance product range. All of this is rooted in science, it's the real deal, and their team knows their stuff. All of the info is in the show notes for you guys to check out more. I hope you all enjoy the episode, and I'll be back here next week with the next one. Guys, welcome back to another episode of Trail Culture. We are back with season two, and this week I'm excited to welcome another legend in the trail community. He was a local legend and has since been on a couple of adventures. From Cape Town and Bunker 11 to international shores, this guy has lived and raced all over the world. He's a sports scientist with a really diverse range of work experience, which I'm excited to discuss. Brendan is a coach who specializes in strength and conditioning. He's worked with a range of athletes from beginners all the way through to elites. And today we're going to be talking about purpose-driven training and hearing a little bit of Brendan's story, which has taken some interesting turns very recently. So I'm super stoked to welcome Brendan Lombard to the podcast today, all the way from Spain. Brendan, welcome. Thanks so much for your time.
No, thank you for having me, Em. It's great to chat.
How are the sunny shores of Spain? I mean, are you guys having a great time? Give us a little bit, Brendan, before we get into the whole podcast side of things, like your move, going from England. What's been happening a little bit in your personal bubble?
Yeah, look, a lot has happened over the past, say, 18 to 24 months or 22 months, I would say. Leaving South Africa for the UK was a decision myself and Julia, my wife, made. Not for any other reason, just except to, you know, quench our thirst for adventure and have more access to Europe. England was different to what we thought it would be. You know, I like to always say it is for some and it's not for others. Turned out, I think it was mostly me that struggled, in England, having to move to a full-time job where I was the general manager of the chain called Everlast Gyms, which is a massive group of gyms in the UK. And the specific site that I took care of was 4,000 members. So it was quite a big gig to take on.
Wow.
And yeah, it was cool. I learned a lot. But there was just something missing. I couldn't train the way I wanted to. I was highly, highly stressed out all the time, sort of operating at 120 Ks an hour, also doing the coaching on the side. So my day pretty much looked like wake up sometimes at 4:30 AM, get to work, get home, carry on working. And I was tired. I was picking up bad habits, which were not healthy.
Yeah.
And I think eventually Julia could also see that it was just not, like I said, quenching our thirst for what we initially wanted to leave for. So we had a long think over and we actually looked at various options of what to do. And we looked at Spain and I actually remember Julia going on to ChatGPT and like typing in a whole lot of prompts to find out where the best place in Europe would be for trail runners and digital nomads and visa friendly for South Africans. And Spain came up as one of them.
Wow.
And yeah, we visited where we are now called Mijas, which is a beautiful, lovely little village in the mountains on the Costa del Sol. And you know, it's got everything we wanted and needed in terms of trail running and being in the mountains. It's got the ocean 5 minutes from where we live, and it's just absolutely warm and welcoming and beautiful. I like to compare it to Cape Town of Europe. It's very similar to back home in terms of landscapes, geographics, weather, So yeah, we are in sunny Spain now, and ever since we have moved, I have been loving every second of it.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, I can see the energy when you talk about your new space, and I think yeah, it'll come up a little later in our episode. But just having good rhythms and routines and finding your mojo, I think that's how you put it in a message to me, and I was like, I love that. Yeah. But Brendan, I think to start off, I mean, you've mentioned moving to Spain and trail running and having access to certain terrain being like a big kind of part of your decision-making process. So to start off, the human, Brendan Lombard, where did your sports journey begin? Like, give us a background of how you got into trail running. You can take this as far back as you want to take it. I know it's an extensive history.
Yeah, I was about to say, how much time do we have? I'll try and keep it as short as possible and sort of put it in a nutshell. But it started when I would say 5 years old. I've always had an active family. So my mother and grandmother, being avid runners, threw me into cross country. And I ran for a club called Rode Poort Athletic Club, which was out in Johannesburg. And I was their youngest club member. And I started cross country. Needless to say, going through school, etc., it didn't really keep that up. And I was actually quite a chubby child. And to give you backstory, I'll never forget it. And it's weird I say this, because this is an 11, 12-year-old speaking, and how memories stick with us, especially ones that affect us. And I was swimming at our pool in our home in Cape Town at that stage. And I had a friend over. She was a little bit older than me, and we had a swimming race. And I beat her in this race, and she said to me, you know, no offense, but, you know, heavier people tend to float better. And I was 11, 12 at the time, and I really took this to heart. I never showed it initially, I think, but it was something that stuck with me. And I developed these self-conscious feelings, even though I probably needn't had or didn't have to have them. I mean, someone so young, you know, you're still developing. So this stuck with me. And I think I chatted to my mom one day, and I just sort of portrayed, you know, what had happened and how it made me feel, etc. And my mom, being the woman she is, bless her, she just said to me, look, I understand how how you're feeling. Let's look at two options. She said, you can try swimming, the sport that I beat this girl at, or we can go see, you know, a nutritionist. And obviously, being that young, I didn't even know what a nutritionist is. So I was like, swimming, let's try the swimming. So I got enrolled at a local swim club. At that stage, I think it was Barracuda Swim Club.
Mm-hmm.
And I swam, and I loved it. And I became this lean, mean swimming machine, and swam in galas, did really well, until I broke my hand one day. And obviously, with a cast on your hand, now you can't swim. So yeah. I was like, okay, what now? So my mom said, well, why don't we try running? Okay, cool. It's an outlet. It's sport. It's going to keep me fit. Let's give running a go. So I ran, and for 6 weeks, that's all I could do. And I found out, hey, I'm actually not too bad at this. And then subsequently, I went full-blown into triathlons and multi-sport. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, which was really cool, because I developed a skill set over various disciplines and was privileged enough to attend two world championships, where I podiumed at both in multi-sport events, namely biathlon at this stage. Another guest of yours that you've had previously was on tour with me once, Daniel Klaas, and he's actually also been to the same old championship events. So yeah, we've known each other for a very long time. Did all of these sports, and then naturally progressed through high school, went to university, Stellenbosch. Still have very fond memories and absolutely love that place. And you might know of them now. I trained with Johan Faria at the Dog Squad.
Okay.
Which was phenomenal. He was my first real, call it, high level coach at that stage. And it was like really tough training. It was really cutthroat. It was all, and when you train in that squad setting, it was like every training session was almost a competition, which was cool to experience. And I remember I was training for the National Road 10-kilometer championships. At this stage, I was focusing on running. And I was in really amazing shape. I mean, I'll never forget, a typical session we did was 10 by 1K, which is actually a classic session. We did it in Jan Marais Park, so it was on dirt.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely epic. And there was another guy in our squad. His name was Jacques, and we used to sort of push each other. And these are guys that, you know, we were averaging 2:50 per K for every K on the trot for 10 of them. And I was in really great shape. And then lo and behold, I had a motorbike accident, which derailed everything. And I decided after that, being young and rebellious, that, you know, going to Terrace and Newbar and Entourage and partying every week was a better option than running. So there was a bit of a hiatus or sabbatical for a good couple of years, where there was no running. And I traveled, I worked a bit abroad, in the party scene, and partied a lot, and it was fun. Look, I don't regret any second of it, because I learned valuable lessons, you know, traveling and having to fend for myself. But there was always something missing. I never ever felt fulfilled or like, I was, self-actualized. I always had, for lack of a better word, an existential crisis, I think. And I came back home to Cape Town, and this was when I stumbled on trail running. And I remember looking at the times guys were running over 20Ks, and I was like, ah, oh, these guys are slow, man. Like 20, 25Ks, doing it in an hour, 45, 2 hours, like, I can do that. Lo and behold, I was brought down to earth.
Nice.
In a very, very spectacular kind of fashion. I'll never forget it. I lined up at the Bastille Day 25K trail. This is now my first trail race, and I think I'm fit and I can take on these guys. And I, like I said, I got absolutely humbled. I ended up limping it in, finishing nowhere near the front of the pack. And that's when I realized, okay, bud, listen, you got a lot to learn. A lot of training to do, and trail running is not the road. And then I guess that the rest is really history. And then I dived straight in. I'm the kind of person, I can't do anything 50%. So
yeah,
as soon as I decided trail running's it, let's go. And it's kind of been my life since.
And how long, Brendan, like from when you made that call, to like the moment that you were on trail? I don't want to say like, I mean, it's never a perfect scenario, I think, when you race, but like that you were really comfortable, like with your training and racing frequently and things, like how long did that take? I'm just interested based on like the base that you had, and then you took a break. Yeah. What was that kind of process like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, luckily for me, or rather thank you to my parents for pushing me into sport, at a young age, I hadn't ever specialized in a certain sport, and I played a lot of sport, and I had that sort of motor skill development, like you said, a bit of a base, and we all know about muscle memory. My body knows how to run, but I didn't have an aerobic engine, and I had to develop that, and I had to learn how to train for the trail. I mean, as we know, training for the trail versus the road is quite different. So I would say it took me, to be competitive, at least a year and a half to 2 years, to where I was comfortable, I would say. Comfortable, yeah. In the sense, you know, I can run up front in South Africa and potentially be on the podium. It took some time, but again, that's the beauty of the sport, right? It's about learning.
That's so cool. And I mean, I'm like, okay, I don't want to deviate too much into the sports science side of things. And I think that will come out when I ask you some more questions. But I know, Brendan, like we spoke about your Spain, like your move to Spain, and you were on the Flat Rock Endurance kind of roundtable episode last year, which was great. And I think at that stage you were about to or had already made the move into like full-time running coaching, or not just running, probably I'm sure you coach multi-sport athletes as well. But like how, I know you were working at the gym, 4,000 people, you also had this great, I think that's where I first kind of, we first met at, you came to run for my study, great, in the name of science, everybody who's listening, always respond to the sports scientists when we ask for participants. But so I'd met you there and I think I'd followed a bit of your running and racing journey. And then you started Bunker 11. I think that came out of lockdown and I was like, man, I wish I lived in Cape Town so I could go and gym at that gym. I mean, I've got all this info, but just for the audience a little bit, like how has your professional kind of life taken these turns and what made you make the call to go full time with the coaching? I'm super interested in that.
Yeah. As you said, Bunker 11 was my brainchild during COVID times. And there was actually an old friend of mine who studied with me at Stellenbosch who I got in touch with, and I said, should we sort of partner up and turn Bunker 11 into something bigger than just the garage we started it in? His name's Mike Balding, was also a Stellenbosch student. And we did that, and eventually Bunker 11 grew and it became a commercial entity. It's still going today. I no longer have a part in it, but it is still going. And yeah, it was a success. Leaving South Africa and moving into a corporate structure was incredibly difficult for me. From going from a space where I had no boss to a space where I had to be on Teams meetings and answer to people and work on the clock was quite difficult for me. Yeah, I struggle. Maybe that's the wrong way to put it. Coming from the background of being your own boss and then having to answer to people, I struggled with, because I had my ways I wanted to do things which I thought worked, but perhaps they didn't. But I think the goal was always freedom, and I never had that working for this company and being in England. Albeit I was doing the coaching on the side with Flat Rock Endurance. At night, for example, designing plans and being in touch with athletes. And Aaron, who's the founder of Flat Rock, played a massive role in bringing me on board and us sort of partnering up and growing my camp of athletes within the Flat Rock setup, to a point where in December we spoke and I said, listen, I need to do this full time. It's my passion. I love running. I love the community. I love the people. Let's just dive in. We're going to move to Spain and let's give it a crack.
Yeah.
And like you said, in December, middle of December, we took that leap. And I haven't looked back since. It's you know, being a digital nomad, which is kind of the buzzword right now, you know, there's a lot of digital nomads. People work remotely all over the world. Has its advantages, sure. There is that degree of freedom, but there's also a lot of responsibility to it. But it's been phenomenal in the sense that it's allowed me to pursue that freedom again and my passion for running and being an athlete.
Yeah.
So it's been great.
And Brendan, so I always forget, I'm like, I think everybody knows what I'm talking about, but this is like my world. So with the type of coaching that you do, I think COVID did change everything, but it was already something that was happening before. And it's online platforms like Training Peaks make getting coaching from Brendan in Spain possible for Emily in South Africa, which is so cool. There's like an accessibility to kind of the virtual coaching, but it is a very different thing to the classic, like something like the dog squad, where you all show up set time, you're doing laps in the Jan Marais Park, and like you've got like eyes on the athlete. But I know that different coaches experience this. I don't know, it kind of fluctuates. Some people struggle with it less than others, but having everything being virtual and like, you know, digital nomad, you are engaging with all of your athletes, or most of them at least, like kind of over the phone. Does that ever, like, is that taxing for you? Is that something you've just kind of adapted to? Do you miss the in-person sessions of something like Bunker 11?
Yes. I'm glad you brought this up. I loved what I did at Bunker 11, especially because of the social side of it and interacting with people in person on a daily basis. And, you know, who knows, maybe I end up doing something like that in Spain at some point. However, you know, we live in an age where technology has made, or rather allowed, people to become closer, albeit not in person. I mean, for example, we're having this call on two opposite ends of the world. You know, I have a lot of engagement with my athletes on a daily basis. And like you said, Training Peaks and certain applications have made that easier. I think there is value in technology working for different mediums of running versus others. For example, track athletes. I personally believe that kind of setting works best when in a squad or with a coach on the track to monitor technique, you know, things like that. A sport like trail running, ultra marathons, marathons, where, you know, a lot of the onus is on the athlete to fulfill their training needs on the road or trails or whatever. And a coach cannot necessarily be on top of Table Mountain waiting for you to see how fast you can summit, you know. So it is this technology that helps us coach and, you know, deliver our expertise, which is fantastic. Moving, and I'm sure we'll get into that in a bit, but the most interesting part of this journey as well has been moving into the strength space. Digitally, and I think it's an ever-growing space, but I think it is our responsibility as scientists and coaches to make sure we do it correctly.
That's a whole other topic for another time. Are we doing things correctly or not? And I love that. I think something that we were taught, Brendan and I studied at the same university, Delhi's, and it's like that you're always like, I think it's Prof Fainter who would say it, but she's like, if you want to be a good sports scientist, you need to be like a student for the rest of your life. You need to constantly be adapting and learning and in all of that, being able to admit what you don't know. And I feel like I see that, like the sports scientists that I engage with, like a couple are popping into my brain who work all over the country and have found themselves in this sort of space. I kind of see that trend, and it makes me really happy.
Absolutely.
And Brendan, so I know that, I mean, you spoke about when you were in the UK, you were struggling to kind of get to your training and like the routine and things weren't working for you. Now you've moved. Spain is sunny. The ocean's close by. Good post-run recovery swim. And I know, I think the last couple of years haven't been easy, not just in terms of routine, but in terms of injury. If I'm not mistaken, you've been struggling with, I think what started out as Achilles tendinopathy and has maybe developed into something else. But take us through a bit of where you've been at with injuries, what's your current kind of training status, if you don't mind sharing about that.
Yeah, I'm not proud of it, but I've had so many injuries, a lot of them being due to my own fault. You know, as athletes, we are quite stubborn and you tend to run through pain sometimes or mismanage your training load, etc. But to get to your question, and injury, my most recent injury was non-insertional Achilles tendinopathy. And for the injury geeks out there, the tendon had about 10 millimeters of thickening. So it was quite bad. I couldn't run. I went to see a specialist in the UK to see what measures I could you know, implement to make sure that I get back to running. And he basically said to me, I had two options. They were going to cut me open, sort the tendon out, which would mean that I had 9 months of recovery. No running, which at my age of 35, you know, and still wanting to be competitive, 9 months is a long time to take away and then still try and rebuild after that. Then I got hold of Dr. Jesse DeBrains in Cape Town, Seapoint. He's a chiropractor. And I was chatting to him. We have quite a good relationship. And he mentioned to me something about a high volume injection of saline solution, which I hadn't heard of before. And so I decided, let me research this and see what it's about. And funny enough, I mentioned it to the doctor that I saw in England. And he said, look, that could potentially be an option, but it has a 50% success rate. So it either works or it doesn't.
Yeah.
But I wasn't willing to get cut open. I think being cut open is too easy in terms of, you know, it's just the only option. There are other mediums. There's always other options before deciding to do that. So anyway, I decided to have this injection, which is guided under ultrasound. And basically what they do is they take a needle and syringe with saline solution, and they inject it into the tendon, which separates the sheath, etc. And it did the trick.
Mm-hmm.
I was running a week later.
Wow.
Nothing crazy, but just starting to run again. And yeah, ever since I've had that, I've been really focused on rehabilitation continued strengthening exercises. And so what I discovered, and again, this is a topic for another time, is that a lot of the rehab that I was prescribed was incorrect in terms of what to do. There's actually a four-phase framework for tendinopathy, and I was probably sent to phase four straight away.
Oh, instantly. Wow.
Yeah. So I went and did the research, implemented the rehab protocol, and I'm okay now. So I am training fully again, which is...
That's great.
Yeah, great win. I feel fantastic. The body is holding up. And I'm really excited to race again. I haven't raced in quite a while. So yeah, excited. It's going to be a good 2025, holding thumbs.
Yeah, that's awesome. And Brendan, I think something that's so challenging is, like, as an athlete, when you're injured, it is extremely difficult, specifically if this is something that you do kind of, it doesn't just have to be professionally, but like if this is your outlet and your sport and your community is like kind of rooted in something like running, and then it's kind of taken away pretty quickly. And then I think there's another layer to struggling with an injury when you're an athlete and a coach. I don't know, personally, I went through a rough phase of having a kind of an ongoing injury, and I was like coaching and being injured. I was like giving sessions to athletes, and I'm like, I would give an organ to like do this right now. Like, I mean, I was desperate to kind of get back out there, and I'm sure you were in that space as well a little bit. But what would you say, like, this being injured and having to work through that and be in the coaching space has taught you about kind of the mental side of an injury?
Yeah, I think it's super important for runners, whether elite, recreational, whatever, to not tie their identity to the sport. I think as soon as you marry the sport and, like I said, tie your identity to it, you run the risk of serious mental psychological turmoil when that gets taken away.
Yeah.
I always say being injured is almost like having to go through a breakup. It's the same kind of heartbreak and feeling, right? So at the end of the day, I tried to zoom out and focus on what truly matters. Things like my lovely wife, my family, back home, friends, and also other things I enjoy, such as entrepreneurial, call them adventures if you want. I've always tried new things. So I focused on other things I enjoy and other passions. And I think as human beings, we are a sum of many parts, and running should just be one of those little parts, but not the part.
Yeah.
So yeah, that helped me just zooming out and realizing I am not my running, I'm Brendan.
That's great. That's great. That's very wise advice. Yeah, I'm like, that's all I have on that, because that was excellent. And I mean, on a happier note, Brendan, I think now you mentioned 2025, you're excited, the body's responding well, you're not injured. Like, what does the race season look like? I'm not sure if you're somebody who keeps that under wraps, but if you've got any of the goals that you're willing to share, what is it looking like for you, local, international, anything exciting on the cards?
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm an open book. So I'll divulge everything. I'm lining up at Tenerife Blue Trail by UTMB next month, which is nice. Around the 29th of March, which will be the first goal I'd like to tick off with absolutely no expectation. I just want to run a race, get to the finish line in one piece, and have a good race and be happy with how it went. So that's race number one. And it's going to be really epic running in, you know, a new place, experiencing the heat of Spanish trail running because the Spanish are incredible and super fast. So that's going to be really cool. And then after that, I go back to a race in what is probably my second favorite place in the world, Cape Town being number one, by the way.
Nice.
My second is Grindelwald in Switzerland, where I'll be doing the Eiger Ultra Trail.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, so another UTMB race. And then after that is probably what I like to call my retribution race, it's a huge goal of mine is going back to CCC. Mm. So I'll be in Chamonix in August for CCC. And again, I just would like to complete that race in one piece because it's an absolute beast. I like to think, you know, we always speak of Europe and racing in Europe. And I believe that, you know, there's Europe or continental Europe, and then you got the Alps.
Yeah.
And the Alps are just on another level. And racing successfully in the Alps is a massive goal of mine. And we've seen Saffers do it. We look at Tony, we look at Daniel, who have done these absolute epic feats. And that is something I strive towards and hope that I could one day achieve. So it's CCC, and then depending how CCC goes, I definitely 100% will be back in Cape Town in November for what is my favorite race, of course, Ultra Trail Cape Town. So that's my plans. And then there'll maybe potentially be some small local Spanish races in the mix. But for now, those are the main ones.
Brendan, that sounds like an incredible race season. I'm excited for you and I'm very stoked to follow it. And I think the Eiger, if I'm not mistaken, your wife has done incredibly well on that race course before. I think I followed her progress for a little while. Is she going to be running as well?
Yes, Julia did phenomenally well the first time we were there and she will be lining up. This will actually be one of the few races we get to line up together at. We're both doing the same distance. We're both running the 50K.
Nice.
And yeah, she's a powerhouse. So, and I think Grindelwald is also a very special place for her and her family. So it was natural for us to select that as one of the destinations this year.
So cool. And Brendan, just on CCC, I really hope you can go back and have the race that you want to have and kind of conquer the whatever like little hurdles that have kind of stopped you from it all panning out the way you wanted to. I think having a race that like kind of fights with you like that, and then like you're like, I just need to settle this. And I've seen that with people who've had things at like UTCT or UTD with like, you know, you fix one issue with, say, the altitude, and then something else pops up, and you're just like, man, like, why can't I put this together? And then it's amazing how one day it just clicks, like, with the right sort of kind of putting the puzzle pieces together and problem solving, and then you just, like, have this race come together. So I really hope that that will be CCC for you this year.
No, thank you. And I think you're 100% correct. It is a massive problem-solving equation. That's all this ultra thing is, or, like, what I like to say, it's a long run with snacks. I think the biggest mistake I've made in the past is running too much with my ego and not running just for the pure enjoyment and challenge of it on a personal level, which I think I've now changed successfully to doing. So hopefully, God willing, it goes to plan, but thank you.
Very cool. And Brendan, I mean, on that, like putting the puzzle pieces together, the problem solving, training with purpose. I think that was something that I was like, we're finally getting into it, everyone, by the way. I was like, this is what I want to chat to you about. The kind of title for this episode came relatively easily. And I think with training for ultras, people are have this like huge time investment that they're putting in. And you know this as an athlete and a coach, and you want to make sure that you're getting a good return on your time investment. But I think it's incredibly overwhelming with, you know, where to start. And that's why people get coaches. But even like what I've seen in the running spaces, and I'm guilty of this as well, is you kind of have a coach who's like a really excellent run coach. They can do and like meet all of the needs in like an aspect of the sport, but say isn't kind of particularly well read or qualified to do the S&C piece or the sports psychology piece or, you know, whichever other elements there is to the sport. And yeah, that's kind of where you come in, where you've kind of specialized in this and have done like, you know, the hard graft to get to the running coaching place. So yeah, I think to start off, like, talk to me a little bit about what are you currently doing in the strength space. I've seen a couple of things online. You've been a bit more vocal about like sharing pieces of advice. And I think you've also got your own kind of like platform that you've developed to distribute S&C workouts, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, take us through a little bit of what you're busy with in the strength space.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. It's a massive passion of mine, the strength and conditioning sphere, for athletes from a wide variety of sports backgrounds, but running being my passion. It is something I focused on in trying to change the narrative of slightly. But first, to get to what I'm doing, is I do have a entity or business that is solely my own. It's just called Brendan the Coach, and mm-hmm. it's a strength and conditioning service for athletes, which is highly, highly specific, right down to the load and rep and tempo of rep the athlete should be doing, highly individualized to the sport and the athlete. And the software I make use of is really cool. It's delivered through an online platform like running on Training Peaks would be, but there's strength and conditioning videos, there's ways, there's communication platforms, which makes everything seamless and also allows me to hold athletes accountable through. And not to mention, it allows me to also coach globally. So that is, has been launched and is operating, and I have a couple of athletes I take care of. And it's exciting because it is still in its infancy, and I like to build things. So I'm looking forward to keep building it. And I'm also just busy working on phase one of what will be three phases of a strength ebook. Which will be available soonish. And I think my biggest goal, more than anything else than just delivering the coaching, is to educate runners on how to strength train, because I feel like, and this is a personal opinion, I feel like it hasn't been done, I'm not going to say not correctly, I'm going to say not optimally over the last decade. You know, running is a one-legged sport and it should be trained as such, for one. And number two, we have to look at a host of variables when doing strength. So yeah, hopefully I can educate and help people.
Yeah. I think, no, you definitely will, Brendan. I've seen your style, and I know where all your kind of methodology is rooted in. Very good and sound science. But I think one of the things, like, what are the most common mistakes that you're seeing across the board, like not just for beginners, because I've seen elites do some really weird stuff when it comes to S&C, but yeah, what are the most common mistakes that you're seeing when athletes come to you and they're like, hey Brendan, like, I would love some help with this, and like, this is what I'm doing. Have you picked up like there's certain themes or kind of misconceptions that people have about strength that you're like, first off, this is like the easiest thing for us to tweak and fix and change?
100%. Look, for the most part, when I've onboarded athletes with strength, etc., they were focusing on what we call the bro split, or, you know, where an athlete will go to the gym, but they would have a leg day, or they will have a push pull day or a back and biceps kind of day. Whereas strength training for runners is highly intricate. And I also feel like the athletes that I spoke to were not implementing periodization protocols. So just for the listeners, periodization is basically a fancy word for manipulating things in your training to make sure that you progress. So that's what I found. There was no periodization, and it was just a case of go sit in a leg press machine or do a bunch of squats, do a bunch of lunges, and that was training. So I have developed a phased approach to strength training for runners. And I believe every runner in their journey needs to start at the beginning, even if you're an elite or a beginner, by training yourself from the ground up. So what I mean by the ground up is, you know, training your foot's relationship with the ground, the sensory mechanisms, proprioception, fancy word for balance, but, you know, letting your body figure out where it is in space first before trying to move into loaded repetitions or things like that. But to get back to your question and the mistakes, it's simple non-periodization. And my argument is, if you are not monitoring what you are doing, how do you know if you're getting better at it? The older doge of, you know, what gets measured gets improved, right?
Yeah.
So we need to change that narrative of, okay, I'm just going to go to the gym and do 4 sets of 10 reps of the leg press at 90 kilos. Okay, but how do you know if you're getting stronger if you're not recording everything? And also, the biggest mistake that I see is that every time athletes are going to the gym, they're doing a completely different session. So again, how do you know you're getting better at something, or how are you improving something if you're doing something different all the time?
Just on that, I think it's even training for an ultra, anyone who's spent some time doing it knows, like, there is only so much diversity that you can bring into a program. It will differ from race to race and what sort of goals that you have within your race, but ultimately I think the hard work, it doesn't matter how you dress it up, like, it's going to be hard work. You're still going to have to hit the hills. You're still going to have to, like, do sessions that are just boring and monotonous, and you're going to have to do them often. And I can imagine it's the same for strength. And I think a couple of questions, Brendan. One is, running, I feel like it's kind of hard to mess up. Like, you can just go and you might not hit the session in terms of, like, maybe your splits are not even if you're doing some sort of interval or repetition, or maybe you go a little bit too hard, but short of being totally wild, there's very little risk in terms of messing up a running session. And do you find that with strength and conditioning that athletes are concerned about the risk or kind of hurting themselves when it comes to spending time in the gym? Is that like a hurdle or a barrier to entry for some people?
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of them. I think the biggest barrier to entry is probably the gym being such an intimidating place. Which it can be, especially for runners. You know, the gym has always been seen as this place where, you know, people with big muscles and pushing heavy weights is and looking absolutely jacked and beautiful is sort of what it's about. But it's not. And I think trying to be the person who can provide guidance so that they feel comfortable going to the gym is something to break past. And also in terms of getting hurt, and this is why I think coaches have such a big role to play, is because they can get hurt if they don't do things correctly. There are some athletes just don't have the ability to work through certain range of motions. And that's because, you know, there's perhaps tightness elsewhere in the body, or, you know, it's just all they're malaligned. And like with running, it's a coach's job to figure out what their training age and history is within the strength space, and then apply principles using that knowledge.
Yeah.
But yes, I think it's a mission to kind of break down that thought of, you know, the gym is an intimidating place, but also let us work with you so that we can make sure you don't get hurt.
Yeah. And Brendan, with the like the strength side of things, I want to go a little bit more practical, just so that we can have a little bit of a case study kind of thing. So one, would you? I mean, I feel like we're encouraging people to, if you've got, everyone's got coming into this with different experience or like levels of strength and conditioning. But would you say that kind of, if you're training for an ultra, like just start working with a strength coach straight away? Or do you feel like people can learn, like, would you point people towards resources where they can learn basic principles and piece it together themselves and then kind of bring somebody on in a professional capacity if they're wanting to level up? Like, how would you encourage people to just kind of get started in that way?
Good question. I think to a degree, you can do it alone. Provided you are, you know, we live in a digital age now where there's so much access to information, but a lot of the information that is getting portrayed on social media or whatever platform it is a lot of the time not the best.
Yeah.
So I would say, first of all, vet your source, make sure that you are getting that information is done by someone who is versed in the space and knows what they are talking about. Because like we said before, you can get hurt. But I do feel when we start getting to the highly intricate parts of strength and conditioning, where form matters with certain lifts, then it's a good idea to get in touch with a coach. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, I think you could get away with it in terms of training simple things like sensory mechanisms. I mean, it's not that difficult to coach someone to develop proprioception. However, to coach an athlete through a eccentric deadlift or, you know, a movement that needs a lot of form control and breathing,
yeah,
I think it's important to work with someone who can advise on that.
Mm. And when it comes to piecing your running volume and training and your S&C work together, what is your approach, Brendan? I think something that I'm seeing a lot is like in run training, you're going general to specific. So let's take a well-known example. Let's use something like a mountain marathon, something like George Mutt or UTCT, where you've got kind of a decent amount of climbing per 10K. You've got about 2,500 meters of vert over the 40K distance. So you need kind of good climbing and descending legs. You know, your like high end speed isn't really the goal, you know? So let's start with that. And then you are 12 weeks out from race day, and it just does. And so you go general to specific. So if you are going to work on some sort of speed, you're going to have a speed or a lactate block very early on, and then you're going to go general to specific. And the closer you get to race day, the more your training should look like the race that you're going to do. So that's like one way of doing it. Other people follow a different kind of block periodization where they have, also that it's not blocked, so you're not splitting things up into like lactate and then kind of aerobic conditioning and then racing. It's you're going, I want you to have the same stimulus, say in a 10-day cycle, week in, week out. So you've got like general training and then track or like your kind of more interval styled stuff all the time. And you're manipulating that in a way to get to the race. Anyway, so those are like some of the ways that you could train for an ultra. For the sake of what I have been doing, say you're going general to specific, does your strength follow the same principle? Are you going with strength training, you're going to go from general and go, you're going to start off something, say, more plyometric and body weights, very general sort of stuff, all the way to specific where you're going to be loading single leg, like kind of trying to get the same sort of stimulus or that you're getting when you're in the mountains. Does that make sense? Is my question making sense? You're the expert. You can take us through a little bit of what it should look like. Because some people are like, You should be lifting heavy very far away from when you're racing and then going lighter close to the time. And then others believe the reverse is true. So I'm just curious, kind of what is your approach, or does it just depend on the athlete?
Yeah, to a degree, it depends on an athlete's training age and history with regards to lifting and running. But I think the best way for me to describe this is to take an example of an athlete that I have been working with, high-level performer, one of the best in the world. And what we implemented was, like I said previously, is a phased approach. And we were a good few months out from race day. So to divulge some information, just to give some context, the athlete hadn't done much specific strength work. So I adopted what I have developed, which is a phased approach. And that phased approach started again with developing the athlete from the ground up. Okay. The relationship with the foot to the ground, feeling where you are in space, proprioception abilities, before even thinking of moving into what I call the general strength phase. Now, the way I work is the general strength phase and the sensory mechanism phase are usually during a non-heavily loaded or intensified running phase. So what I would do is implement the general strength phase after the sensory phase, which comprises of basic strength, things like squats, things, some unilateral movements, lunges, nothing heavily loaded, not much resistance or anything like that. Then moving into when the athlete sort of starts a more intensified block of running training, we moved into unilateral specifics and focusing on variables such as time under tension, tempo of lifts, eccentric loading, things like that. So I always moved into plyometrics and what we call PAP training, which is a post-activation potentiation, towards the end of the intensified running block. The muscles are under a great deal of stress. We might as well train them together as such in the gym and on the trails. So we must also remember that runners typically will do 2 to 3 strength sessions a week. So there is time to recover. However, what we must also try and remember is that we do not want runners to be doing a strength session on a recovery day. Otherwise, we are mitigating recovery protocols to a degree. So ideally, what we want to be seeing is if you have got intervals on a Wednesday, do them first, always your running session first, I would recommend, and then your strength session as a second session in the day.
Okay.
That way, you're very likely going to have a recovery day the following day, and you're giving your body the best chance of recovery. And then moving into a competition phase with strength training, we obviously focus on tapering, decreasing the load, et cetera, to make sure that we get to race day in the most fresh shape possible. So yeah, it's like you said, it is athlete specific. But I believe that the phased approach fits in rather coexists with their running plan. And which phase will coexist when ultimately is decided by where the athlete is in their plan. But also complexity of exercises. You're not going, even an elite performer who is right at the end of mid intensity load, but has never deadlifted in their life before, you're not going to give them a deadlift.
Yeah.
So it's a complex thing. And I always also like to say that strength coaching is really tough in terms versus running coaching, not in the sense of the theory behind it or anything like that, but just purely the workload. If you look at how we design running programs where it's fairly straightforward and we manipulate, volume, frequency, intensity, all that kind of stuff. When you are doing strength coaching, you have to nail down exercise selection, load, volume, tempo of lifts, all that kind of stuff for each exercise. not just for one running session. And there could be six exercises within one session. So it's a lot of work. And I've always said I have so much respect for that coach in the gym that stands there with a notepad and is writing down what his athlete is doing. To me, that is the sign of someone who is monitoring, checking what variables are manipulated, measuring, etc. Not just, for lack of a better word, thumb-sucking a session and saying, okay, we're doing a run-specific session today. So these are the things I would like to see happen. However, I would also say that it's not possible for all athletes to get that.
Yeah.
So something is better than nothing.
And just on the training with purpose, Brendan, I think that I'm sure you have this in your when you're coaching your runners, but I'll often have someone who's like, my week is has been turned upside down. Like, what are the most important sessions for me to get to this week, you know, running wise? And again, that's like slightly dependent on the goal and what they've been doing or missing kind of in the weeks leading up to it. So it's not always an obvious answer of like, you're training for a marathon, get to your long run. You know, it kind of depends on what they've been doing. But a question that I'm often asked is, like, what is going to be better? Like, I've only got time for one thing. Like, do I do my run or my strength? And I think there's a side of me that's like, if you're a runner, like, you need to get into, specifically a trail runner, you need to get into the mountains because the mountains will make you strong. But I feel like maybe that's not always the right response, because in order to get into the mountains in the way that I want you to get there, you need a specific type of strength. You know, it feels like a bit of a chicken and an egg situation. So what would your kind of advice be to an athlete who says something like that to you?
Life happens, first of all. Nothing in life is linear. You're always going to have peaks and troughs if your life looked like a graph. And when we look at, let's say, a week of training and an athlete says, listen, I just can't get to both sessions today. Which one is the one I should do? I would always tend to point them in the direction of their running session and then perhaps see where I could fit in a reduced loaded session of strength within their current week. But however, we must also remember that one hot day doesn't make a summer. So if you're going to miss one gym session, it's not the end of the world. However, let's try our best to get to the rest and to hit our targets as close and as possible as we can. Because of course, consistency is key. But we're all human at the end of the day. And I also think as trail runners, we find our stoke by being outside. And first and foremost, I think that is important, not only for your headspace and need for adventure. But yeah, I think if you ask any runner, if they had two sessions on the day and which one did they want to do, I think most of them are going to say running. So,
yeah.
But in saying that though, I will say gym, or strength rather, is one of the, like, it's like cheating for runners, right? It's absolutely key to performance, injury prevention, and longevity in the sport.
Yeah.
If you want to be running for a long time, go lift some weights.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. It's the what is it? The anti-aging solution. Let's just go and lift something heavy. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And
Brendan, with seeing progress or kind of initial gains with strength training, just from the angle of wanting to encourage somebody who is getting into the sport, they're running a lot, they're also starting to lift, they're constantly sore, they're feeling like, is there a light at the end of this tunnel? How long would you say, like, hey, stick with this in, you know, X many weeks, you're going to see a significant change just in your day-to-day. And, you know, in this amount of time, you're really going to see the start to reflect in your running. What would you say are kind of the timelines for improvement or kind of noticeable changes in performance for athletes who just get started with the strength journey?
Yeah, so good question. I would say And just to give context before I answer, we must remember that strength training, yes, it increases our strength gains, but there's another thing it also does, and that's it's a neuromuscular stimulus.
Mm.
So it also teaches our body, you know, or our muscles rather, what we want from it. So I would say you could see or you could feel changes within 3 weeks.
Yeah.
As early, and that's because of a neuromuscular stimulus. Funny phenomenon, and this could actually be a topic for research. We could actually, maybe I must pop a message to Simon. But I've experienced that sometimes I would do a gym session which involved plyometrics, say on a Thursday, and my Saturday run had a lot of climbing, and I felt like a king. And why is that? Is it because I've switched something on neuromuscularly or told my body, listen, we are going to need a lot of power output on Saturday. Let's fire up the engine. So I don't know. Maybe I don't have the answer if that is an actual phenomenon, but I've certainly felt something like that on more than one occasion.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but to answer your question, that's why I say I think anything up to 3 weeks, you could feel something.
Mm. Mm.
And that means even if you started with body weight exercises as a beginner runner, you will notice changes. You'll feel more sturdy. You'll have better balance. Your body will figure out where it is in space. Something as simple as, you know, taking the stairs to the office will feel a little bit easier.
Yes.
You know? So it's all these little things that where we will feel change.
That's great, Brendan. I think I feel like I knew this was going to happen when I started to talk about training with purpose and this and that. I was like, we're going to need to do a follow-up episode where you just take like one example and like dissect it. Because we've done some great kind of general chatting and then we went, you know, slightly more specific with an example, but that's just like an example. And something you mentioned now is like training age, and like the history the person has with sport. There's a difference between somebody who's kind of played sport and has been active their whole life. They may have never set foot into a gym, but there's certain kind of movements and things that will come more easily to them because of the way they've lived their life, you know, versus someone else who has been incredibly inactive, and something like a simple like squat with a weight is going to be the first time, you know, that their body experiences something like that. So I'm really actually keen for us to do something like a follow-up on that, and I know that you'll be open to it, which is awesome. But just for kind of to like wrap up or comment again, so like athletes who they're trying to put like the strength puzzle pieces together with their running program, they may or may not be working with a coach. Would the suggestion be, just to go back to your point of like start simple, make sure the exercises make sense. So we're talking like single-legged, like loading, like running is a single-legged sport. So if you had to, like off the top of your head, be like, this is the sort of time and like sets and reps that you're going for, what would you throw out as like a loose structure? Like should people start, is something starting like just start with 20 minutes, you know, and this is how you should break it down? Because I think that's another thing. People are like, I can't do an hour of strength, so I'm just not going to do it at all.
Yeah, so I'll make it simple. Here are a few exercises. Squats, bodyweight squats, lunges, right? Plank, and what we call an inchworm. You take those four exercises. Yeah, four exercises. You do three sets of 10 to 12 reps, and you do that for the next 3 weeks. See how you feel. And if you think it works, which it will, then perhaps it's time to dive a bit deeper and go down the rabbit hole and pursue a strength regimen with a coach or you know, research it yourself. But and as I said, when you get to the later stages of really looking at heavier loads, etc., it may be a good idea to work with someone.
Yeah. That's great. And I all of Brendan's info will be in the show notes. So if you're looking for somebody to take you further on your strength journey, this guy is the guy. Brendan, this has been great. Thank you for your time. I'm excited for kind of your, on a personal level, your move and you and Jules getting used to Spain. I'm stoked to see you guys line up at some races, and kind of that journey to CCC for you. And yeah, even just the S&C side of things, I hope that that goes well. And before we let you go, just a round out question I've been using for season two is, what is something that you've read recently that has inspired you?
Yeah, thank you very much. I'll revert to a quote which I try I try to live by. And it's a quote from the movie The Art of Flight, which is a snowboarding documentary, where Travis Rice said the following, and I actually have to look at it. He said, "You know, it's funny what's happening to us. Our lives have become digital, our friends now virtual, and anything you could ever want to know is just a click away. Experiencing the world through secondhand information isn't enough. If we want authenticity, we have to initiate it. We will never know our full potential unless we push ourselves to find it. And it's in the self-discovery that inevitably takes us to the wildest places on earth."
Wow.
Yeah, I thought that was quite profound. And it's definitely something I think we as human beings should pursue, is adventure. Because the one thing that will live with you forever is your memories of being in amazing places. And what better way to experience those places than on foot, right?
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I love that. Seeking adventure, getting out there, closing the computer and putting the phone away while going out for, you know, insert favorite sport here. I think that's awesome. Yeah, Brendan, thank you so much. This has been really interesting. I'm excited for the follow-up. My brain is already ticking over. I'm like, this is what we can chat about, da-da-da-da-da. So I will bother you about that at a later stage. But yeah, just for now, best of luck with the training. I hope the body continues to hold up. And I'm excited to follow the progress and hopefully unpack some of those race performances with you in the not-so-near future.
Thank you very much for having me. I've really enjoyed this, and I'll keep following what you're doing and listening to the pod.
Awesome. Thanks, Brendan. There you have it, folks. Brendan Lombard on purpose-driven training. So cool to be hearing his thoughts and insights, and to go through kind of practical examples of where we can even start to piece this puzzle together. I really am excited and passionate about performance metrics and measurement, and for those of you who listen to the Trail Science episodes, you'll know that. And yeah, let us know, or let me know in the show notes, if you like the idea of case studies, if you want to be hearing more specific examples from the experts of and coaches and athletes all around the world. I think that could be something that's quite new and fun and different. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and I'll be back next week with the next one. There is hopefully some exciting news that I'll be able to share with you all soon. Thankful that you guys listen and that you tune in.